This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Arthur Ashe was a legendary tennis player. He is still the only African-American man to win a singles title at Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, and the Australian Open. He was also an activist who used his power and privilege to stand up against apartheid in South Africa. After his death, he was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Bill Clinton. What many don't know is that part of his journey began right here in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, to be exact. Arthur Ashe was from Richmond, but he came to Durham's Haytide district for tournaments. And those who were around back then remember him as a skinny guy struggling to be competitive. Joining us right now is one of the guys who was around back then, Irwin Holmes, among the first African-Americans to graduate from North Carolina State, also considered the first African-American captain of an ACC team, participating in a panel discussion on the legacy of African-Americans in tennis in the Triangle, coming up very soon. But he joins me right now, Irwin Holmes. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Tell us about the skinny kid, Arthur Ashe, who used to come to Durham.
Well, there's an interesting story. I heard of Arthur Ashe when he was 3 years old from a friend who was playing in a tournament in Richmond and came back from Richmond and talking about this young little three-year-old kid who was on the court hitting balls like a grown man. And it was Arthur Ashe. And I had now discovered Arthur later in a tournament in Durham at the Algonquin Tennis Club when Arthur showed up as now about a six-year-old still hitting the ball like a grown man. Arthur was an unusual player who at that point was so small, even though he could hit the ball like a grown man, a kid another three years older by the name of Joe Williams in Durham would beat Arthur decisively but just because of the weight difference. But Arthur at age 15, when his weight finally caught up a bit, suddenly was beating every black male tennis player in the United States decisively. And, of course, you know the history after that. From there, Arthur went on to be a world-famous tennis player.
Well, this is a nested story because you talk about a black man playing tennis at the age of three. There's a story in that. But also coming to Durham and playing at something called the Algonquin Club. Talk about Durham as a place for black tennis players.
Well, Durham was a special place for various reasons, but particularly tennis. We had in Durham lots of tennis courts, which was unusual, that were available to us. Some of them were in the public school system. Some were in the hill, the recreation apartment for the city of Durham. And in the third place, which was really unusual, we had a privately, for black-owned only, black tennis players that existed in Durham that had tennis courts available, particularly for the members, but they occasionally let the little black kids from the ghetto to sneak on the court and play and learn to play tennis.
And this was, and the city itself was giving lessons at the time, right? Do I have that right?
You're right. The city of Durham actually started in about 1955, started giving tennis lessons free to any kid who wanted to play tennis.
Including African-Americans.
This was particularly
for African Americans. So this makes it a good place to come if you're a tennis player in general. Arthur Ashe, did you ever play against him?
Yes, I did. I was a pretty good tennis player myself, and actually won tournaments that Arthur was in. But at the time, Arthur was losing so quickly, I never got to play Arthur. I only played Arthur the first time when he was 15, as you heard earlier. That happened to be the year when Arthur was now, by that time, so good that no black male tennis player in America could beat him. And I played Arthur in the Forest Hill tennis courts 1 week, and then in Richmond, Virginia, the following week, and Arthur beat me decisively. So, unfortunately, I can't say I ever beat Arthur.
You should have caught him when he was six.
You're right.
But here's the thing. You did play. Then you went on to play at NC State. You were captain of the tennis team.
Yeah, I sure did. I was lucky that I chose NC State because I wanted to major in engineering. And I got there and found out that NC State didn't give college scholarships in tennis at that time. So the tennis team was pretty ordinary. So I went out for the team, made the team easily, and played there for 4 years.
And we should. There are a number of stories that we can also tell, because the fact that all of these resources, particularly tennis and others, were available, had something to do with your father being the head of the Parks and Rec Department, a man who had a degree in chemistry and found his way to Durham and created all these programs.
Yep, that's correct. My dad came here on a football scholarship in 1930 and played at North Carolina Central. And played there for 4 years, was an All-American football player, and also was valedictorian of his class. He wanted to be a chemist, but back in the 30s, blacks as chemists didn't exist very often. So he ended up having to teach school to find a job, and ended up in Durham, and ended up in running the parks program for the blacks in Durham, and started, since he was sitting there with all these talents that weren't getting used otherwise, developing more and more programs for that Parks and Rec programs, and had all kind of things, softball, baseball, tennis, basketball, badminton, marbles. If you could think of it and play it, my dad had it in the program.
Well, this speaks to a rich history in the city of Durham. We're talking in particular about tennis, and I'm talking with Durham native Irwin Holmes, a pioneer who helped integrate NC State and ACC Sports, co-captain of the tennis team at NC State. He's going to participate in a panel discussion called The Legacy of African Americans and Tennis in the Triangle, and it's going to happen Sunday at North Carolina Central University School of Education. Joining us now is his daughter, Sherry Holmes, founder and director of Triangle Friends of African American Arts, who's organizing the panel discussion. Welcome back, Sherry.
Thank you very much. Well, I must say I'm very proud of my dad and my grandfather and all that they have accomplished. But learning and understanding the history, tennis goes back in Durham 100 years with African Americans, which is so unusual and unique. And so that's why Arthur Ashe and national tennis players would come to Durham. And so knowing this history, knowing about this wonderful play that you're going to hear about in a second, that's what kind of got me started about having this panel. And it's just a special thing. When you see something like that, it gives you a sense of pride and understanding of yourself and your community. And then it gets you excited about the sport of tennis itself. One of the panelists actually is a woman. Her name is Bonnie Logan, who integrated the Women's Professional Tennis Tour, who grew up in Durham. So we've got some people with some great experiences. And with tennis, you know, particularly for women, the top women making money in sports, Serena Williams is making $18 million. And so rather than having everybody go into basketball and football, you have, you know, tennis where you can get college scholarships. If you want to go into business, there are a lot of deals that happen on the tennis court. You can play throughout. So tennis really is a great sport to play. And we're hoping that one of the effects of this will be people will be excited about tennis. In the Triangle, there's two strong African-American tennis clubs today. And then we also have, of course, as my dad mentioned, Parks and Rec, which has both in Raleigh and Durham, has a huge number of, significant number of tennis programs and tennis courts.
Well, tell us about that Algonquin Tennis Club that your dad mentioned.
Well, it started in the 1920s. And, of course, to start a club like that, there already had to be a significant interest in tennis. And they actually had a tennis, as my dad mentioned, tennis courts and a tennis club. And so at the club itself, there would be a lot of social gatherings, but it would also be, you know, obviously they'd have a lot of tournaments and really develop tennis players.
This suggests to me that there's a thriving black middle class at that point if there's money to make a tennis club.
Exactly. With the Haytai community, and then you had North Carolina Mutual, you had Lincoln Hospital, you had those founding fathers who came and really established the community. W.E.B. Du Bois recognized Durham as a really special place for the African-American middle-class community. There's Black Wall Street in Durham, and so Durham had a really thriving middle class, and tennis kind of evolved from that.
Which is why you want to have this conference and conversation about the history of at least tennis, but there's
exactly.
much more.
Now, one thing I just wanted to mention about that, it's due forecast to snow on Sunday, unfortunately.
Oh, well.
So if that happens, we're going to, if you've registered, you'll get an email. And of course, we'll have updates on the website and we'll reschedule it. But we have our fingers crossed that the weather will hold.
Well, I'm talking to Sherry and Erwin Holmes at the moment about the early life of Arthur Ashe and tennis in the city of Durham, North Carolina. They're holding a panel discussion Sunday, if the snow holds off, called The Legacy of African Americans and Tennis in the Triangle and North Carolina's. That's going to be at North Carolina Central School of Education. There's a new play coming to Burning Coal Theater in Raleigh this month that centers on the later years of Arthur Ashe. And joining us now to talk about Ashe in Johannesburg is Jerome Davis, Artistic Director at Burning Coal. Welcome back, Jerome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Frank.
You commissioned this play, right?
Yes, we did. It's the first time that's happened. We have a young playwright from Miami named Hannah Benitez, who's just beginning to start what I think is going to be a meteoric career as a playwright, and we knew that if we didn't get her now, we weren't going to get her at all. So we asked her, and she said yes.
Tell us about this play.
Well, I personally have been a tennis fan from a very early age, and I grew up, you know, came of age in the 1970s when there were a number of kind of bad boy tennis players, McEnroe and Connors and Ely Nastasi and people like that, that behaved, you know, pretty badly on the court. And in stark contrast to that was this sort of serene and upright young man named Arthur Ashe, and so I was always interested in him. But a couple of years ago, I was reading a book of essays by Frank DeFord, mm-hmm. the sports journalist who, in later years, became an NPR contributor. DeFord had a book where he talked about an incident that had occurred in his life when he followed Arthur to Johannesburg for the South African Open. And while he was there, something extraordinary happened off the tennis court that immediately seemed like, you know, I sort of couldn't imagine someone hadn't made a movie or a play or a book about it, but indeed they had not. So I commissioned a writer to write it.
And talk about that, because the event was actually a debate at a dinner party.
That's
I mean, this is controversial because Arthur Ashe goes, he'd been denied a visa several times to segregated South
Correct.
Africa. Yeah. Then they decide it might be in their best interest to show the world, you know, tell a different story, the propaganda that we're all right. And of course, that put Ashe in a difficult position.
The boycott,
was he complicit, right?
Yeah. The boycott had begun to pick up steam by then, and people from all over the world were starting to say, let's leave. You know, don't do business with that country until they change their ways, particularly with regard to the African citizens in their country who didn't have the right to vote, who didn't have the right to travel at night without special papers, you know, all sorts of draconian measures. And so the fear was that by going there, he would send the message that everything was okay. Look, he went over, he played a tournament, nothing bad happened, so how bad could it be? That's what the fear was. And I think that's a legitimate argument. But Arthur's argument was, I want to show the people of that country that it is possible for a black man to succeed at the highest levels, and succeed he did.
And the play itself is centers on we mentioned the debate. There was this extraordinary debate that occurred that really wasn't scheduled, right? It was
Correct.
An impromptu debate.
Very impromptu, yeah.
And what was that all about? Tell us more about that.
Well, a man named Christoph Hannekom, who was an anthropology professor at the University of Stellenbosch, which advertised itself as sort of the Harvard of South Africa, just asked him sort of at the last minute, since you're going to be here, and since you seem to be in opposition to our government, why don't you debate me on the subject? And I'm not sure Hannekom thought he would say yes, but to his surprise, he did. And the debate was a very interesting affair.
We will talk about that and see more about it. Ashe in Johannesburg is a play that runs at Burning Coal Theater from January 24th until February 10th. One of many African-American-themed plays coming to the Triangle. Sherry, your organization, Triangle Friends of African-American Arts, shines a light on black plays headed to this area. Tell us more about that.
Yes, I'm just so excited. Actually, every year I get excited, and this is another great season with wonderful African-American theater. And we're having an African-American theater preview On January 20th, we're bringing together 9 companies, and they're going to be doing songs from musicals, scenes from plays. We have 5 playwrights who are going to be there, including Mike Wiley. He wrote Blood Done Sign My Name. That was listed last year as one of the top plays in the Triangle. We're going to have 3 songs, one from a Tony-nominated musical. 4 of the shows are world premieres. So every time it's special, and, you know, I hate to say it every year, but this year it's going to be, I think, equally special given what's going on.
Talk about the change, because the point of this is, and you have made this your mission, to highlight Black art scene in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. This is the theatrical preview. How have things changed since you've begun this, and how would you describe the scene right now?
You're talking about the arts in general?
Yeah, arts in general, and particularly...
There's just so much to do in the arts. This year in particular, I've worked on my schedule because we do something regularly. We'll go to see an art exhibition. We'll go to see a show. And from now until March, we're doing something every single week, and the calendar is still filling up. There's just so much to do. There's a wonderful community, African-American community, but I think also we're seeing now everybody is appreciating African-American art, as we should, because it's the experience of everyone here in this country. And so that also is bringing more resources, more attention, and more people coming to African-American arts.
Sherry Holmes is founder and director of Triangle Friends of African-American Arts. Her dad is here, Irwin Holmes, former co-captain of NC State's tennis team, considered the first African-American captain of any ACC team. And Jerome Davis, artistic director of Burning Coal Theater. First up is a panel discussion Sunday, North Carolina Central. That's the panel discussion that Sherry and her dad will participate in, talking about tennis. Then the production Ash in Johannesburg runs from January 24th to February 10th at Burning Coal Theater. All of that is at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank all of you so much for being on the program. What a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. It is a program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.